and things and lives and jobs.
Stuff and things and life and jobs and suck.
And Eugene's.
Yeah. The good news, it sounds like the owner of that club wants me to help him do stuff and get regular work out of it. So
that's good. Well, I will be down in Albany on Saturday.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, down at the Linn County Expo Center and Fairgrounds for the Market for the Strange.
And that's Saturday the 30th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if any one of you are local to the Portland metro area, come buy my shit.
Albany and smells like farts.
If you're local to Eugene and you want to come see Adam Ray, don't bother. It's sold out.
You instead, come see me.
Come see.
From 11 to 6, I believe. Hmm. I'll be there.
And then my show is at 7. Again, you can't come.
You can't. Sold out. You can't
You
be
can
there.
Come and say hello if you want.
But you can't.
But you cannot.
Oh, we were just here.
Yesterday.
So, we're just gonna do this. Hey, guess what? Welcome to Ghosts and Hoes. Ghosts and Hoes, a paranormal podcast where we talk about all things spoopy, cryptids, aliens, motherfucking witchcraft.
Definitely that one time.
Murder most motherfucking foul. Yeah. And that one time. Spotion.
I really don't like that portmanteau.
Well, you know,
I don't know what it is about it.
That's
but
a poor
it
man
just...
don't.
It's a weird poor man's toe.
Ew.
I don't like that either.
Yeah, I don't either.
That's... I have a poor man's toe.
Unsavory.
It is unsavory.
To me.
Unsavory. Well, it is unsavory. That's why. So.
Well, we're all tired.
A little bit. I just finished my story today. I feel like I've had no fucking weekend whatsoever. Because you know why?
Because you just finished your story.
Because I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. I did not.
Okay.
I didn't.
Sounds like it didn't.
I didn't. Yeah.
Right, no. There's nothing anybody can do about that.
No, I fucking didn't. So, do we have any backhoes?
Yeah, a couple.
All right.
First,
yes.
R.I.P. Diane Crittenden, which the name isn't familiar, but she was a very important person because according to the Discussing Film Twitter account, Diane, quote, was the casting director for Star Wars A New Hope, which included watching over 3,500 auditions before helping George Lucas choose Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford as the main trio.
Wow.
Rip.
So she's responsible for the casting of the largest franchise in movie history.
Yep.
Okay.
And, you know, may the force be with you, Diane. Always.
Forever and always.
Amen.
Rip.
Yeah. Apparently there's some shit going down with Diddy today, I guess. His homes have been raided.
Diddy?
Yeah.
Diddy did it?
I just saw it right before I walked in here, so I'm not 100% sure exactly why it's happening.
Sure.
But it is.
It takes a while for that information to actually come out.
Yeah. So I don't know the reason. I just saw it, the headline.
That's
right,
kind of wild.
Before I walked in. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to have to look into that and elaborate later. But that's a thing.
People been done saying it. So.
Well, he's been involved in
a lot of things.
Fucked up shit. So I feel like it's
a lot of
merging of several things. Did you look?
Actually, no, but there are a couple other deaths that should be mentioned.
Go
names
on.
That you may not know.
Okay.
But one of them is an actor named M. Emmett Walsh.
Oh, yes. I was going to put him on my list and forgot because I can only turn my head one direction without pain.
Right.
So.
M. Emmett Walsh has been in so many goddamn movies.
He's another one of those guys where you have no idea what his name is, but you see his face and you're like, oh yeah!
That guy? Does he look familiar?
No.
So, one of his biggest roles was in the very first Coen Brothers movie called Blood Simple.
It's a very good movie.
He is the main antagonist. I'm looking up other notable roles of his now. Also, a name that will only be familiar to Southern Californians is a man by the name of Larry H. Parker, who was one of the first personal injury attorneys. If you know, I know that's a weird one to bring up, but That man's name and voice has been in my head since I was a child.
Oh my God.
I'm Larry hilarious. H. Parker, and I'll fight for you. If you're in Southern California,
I will fight
you
for
said
you.
That right along with me as I said it just now. anyway, Mr. Walsh was also in The Righteous Gemstones. He was in Knives Out. Let's see. He was
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
The Jerk. Raising Arizona.
Mm-hmm. He has been in a considerable amount of very, very important movies throughout.
Oh, that's right. He was in Harry and the Hendersons. I totally forgot about that.
So, R.I.P. Mr. Walsh.
R.I.P. indeed. And also, he was in Critters.
Yes.
Like, if you throw a dart at a board of popular movies from the 80s, especially, he's probably in one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And for Larry H. Parker, I don't wish you to rest in peace, but, you know, he's dead.
Sure.
Sure.
I have nothing at all about that.
Oh, nor should you. If you're not, like I said, if you're not from Southern California, you have no reason to know who that man is.
And you know what?
I'm not.
Some of you are.
Some of you are.
I'm not, and I don't.
They might know.
They might.
So.
That's possible.
And also.
Yes.
Oh, do you have some?
Sure do.
Hell yeah.
These ones, because I brought these today because I just really wanted to try them and needed to get them out of my house before I ate them without letting you guys try.
Fair. While you were getting this out, I want to tell you about your ramen. I had it. So, couple things.
Go on.
I wasn't a huge fan of the consistency of the noodles. They're a little
thick.
That's
fine. Oh, I like them.
As far as the flavors are concerned.
You were just about to say I like them thick.
I was gonna.
Yeah. Yeah, you were.
I was.
Yeah, you were.
And this is exactly why I didn't.
And I caught it. Yeah. I caught it. I did.
You did.
I like them thick, too. I do. And chewy.
Yeah.
Thick.
Well.
Thick.
All that is to say.
Thick.
I still liked them. They were just a little thicker than I'm
used to. It takes a minute to get used to them if you're used to eating like Maruchan ramen.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you get used to that, you're like, oh no, this is for me. I like this better.
I put off having all of them for a while because of how cheesy the packages made the flavors look.
Oh yeah, I love it though.
And then I had it. And it is actually a lot more subtle than the packaging leads on. Like, there is...
Which one did you have them...
I had...
I can't remember.
I had the one that was advertised as most cheesy today.
Oh, the four cheese. Or the quattro cheese, yeah.
Yeah, I had that one. And just, like, the spice packet was spicy enough, plus I added some aardvark to it.
Nice.
And it was great.
Yeah,
it
that's one of their, scale lesser hot ones, but yeah, I like it. They also make their own. You can buy the actual like hot sauce on its own without the noodles. So if you like the flavor of the hot sauce that comes in the little packet, you can buy it on its own.
Good to know.
I know they have the regular hot, the two times hot, and carbonara.
I don't know if I had the carbonara. I think I did have the carbonara because that one was so off-putting to John.
Oh, was it the one in the pink? Like the light pink packaging? Yeah.
Still really spicy, though, and I like
it a
still,
lot. And that one is like probably one of their least spicy, I think.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah. I like the flavor on that one's really, really good.
Yeah. I was very skeptical about a carbonara ramen.
Right? And you're like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, it was great.
That they have a bunch of that at Fubon.
Okay.
I was just there. So, yeah, you can buy those. I like the play, love the flavor of those ones. Mm-hmm. That's the one I used one time when I made the ramen salad rolls. It was the carbonara one.
Sure.
Because the flavor wasn't, like, super punch you in the face. It was just nice. The other one I use when I make that is the habanero lime, which is also very good.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I used when I made the birria ramen.
Okay.
Was the habanero lime, which 10 out of 10, do recommend that.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. All in all, everything I had was very tasty. Thank you for bringing those
over.
Welcome. Go buy whatever the brand that was.
Yeah.
Bulldick.
Dick.
Dick.
You want to start with the sweet?
thick.
You make the decision.
Because then we can end on spicy. Either way,
they're going to end over here and I'm going to finish them.
Right. Start sweet then.
I might fight you. I don't know yet. I saw these at the store and I'm like,
let me see.
It's some sort of Oreo.
Dirt cake.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay.
Dirt cake flavored Oreo.
Have you guys had dirt cake?
Yes.
Okay.
It's dirt been a long time since I'm not a child. And I feel like if I went somewhere and had one as an adult, people might have questions.
The first time I had it, I went to Temple as like a daycare when I was little. And they brought out dessert. And they brought it out in ceramic pots. They're like, we're going to eat dirt today. And they scooped it out on our plate.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
They do for kids.
Ooh. I don't know what's happening. I got real excited because there is colorful bits in here.
I think they're
in the cookie. I think it might be the
diced up gummy worms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, why is my cookie glittering? Oh.
Have you had the cosmic Oreos?
The ones with the
the Pop Rocks in them?
I have not.
Oh, they're so good.
That's a thing?
Uh-huh. They're really good.
They just smell like regular Oreos. Ooh, but they look...
Oh, yeah, they're very glittery.
The inside has two different chocolate colors, so that's a thing. That's
neat. Let's 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. Okay.
That...
It tastes just like an Oreo.
That tastes like an Oreo.
Just tastes like an Oreo.
I mean, they're delicious because it's an Oreo. But I am bummed. But also, I haven't had a dirt cake in so long, I don't know if I would remember exactly what it tastes like.
There's a little bit of that creamy chocolate in the back.
Yeah. Fucking woodpecker chuckle is just...
It's my Vince Masuka laugh. It's my giggity laugh. Okay, now, those.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a roufflé. A roufflé, if you will.
It is a roufflé.
Is it a foreign roufflé?
No.
Okay.
These ones you can buy right now at the store.
At the Anywhere store.
Mm-hmm. Which is what I did. I saw them and I was like, those seem like they'd be fun to try.
Mm-hmm.
They smell very vinegary.
Okay.
Which kind of makes sense.
What flavor is it?
A Buffalo?
Hot wing.
Okay. Hot wing!
Oh, yeah, that one got me.
Mm-hmm. Very vinegar heavy.
It smells like Buffalo. I'm not going to stop saying it that way.
I wasn't going to ask you to.
Face.
Yep. That smells like a fucking buffalo wing.
Yep, sure does. We ready?
Mm-hmm.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay.
Holy shit.
Those are fucking good.
Tastes like a goddamn chicken wing.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting this to be way more intense. Mm-hmm. I really like them.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10 out of 10 on that.
Yeah. And good thing, because you can still buy them literally anyway. I just saw some more last night.
10 out of motherfucking 10.
Those are delightful.
Do recommend. Tastes like a goddamn chicken wing. Well, you can have it, man.
I have to fight the chips for you? Mm-hmm. I will. Fuck you, chips.
I was really hoping you wouldn't catch that.
Hey, we've all got... Everybody gets one today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everybody gets one catch. It's your fucking turn next.
Well, I have a novel to read, so I'm sure there's going to be more than one.
I was going to say, give her 3 sentences of her story. We'll find one.
I have a novelle.
Unlike yesterday?
A novella, if you will.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's a long and...
Well, you go first. So.
Well, then let's just jump the fuck in, because...
You got some Barts?
I have Barts today. Barts for the eyes.
Remembered your eye Barts?
I did. I'm gonna put them on for y'all. So, if you didn't tune in last week...
Go do that.
Because I am continuing my story about the disappearance of Emanuela Orlandi. And just to get you up to speed, she and Marilla Gregory went missing in 1983... Marilla went missing from Rome, and Emanuela from Rome as well, actually, but she is a citizen of the Vatican.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of really weird shit going on with this story. So, and it's, I'm just not going to retell it. Go listen. It's too much.
Yeah.
So, we're going to back up a little.
Okay.
We're going to back up to October of 1983, Okay. It's October. All that shit's gone down. The president of Italy has appealed to Turkish for the release of Emanuela Orlandi and Mirella Grigori. All calls to the families from the kidnappers. All calls to the families, see there it is, from the kidnappers have all been redirected to their government-appointed lawyer, Gennaro Adeggio, who could have helped them with their bankruptcies, but really not much else in the end. Well, on the 27th of October, he got a call from The American saying that Mirella Grigori had been killed.
Oh, no.
And that her body would be returned to her family the week before Christmas.
Ugh.
Adeggio then asked about Emanuela, to which the American said, I have nothing to say about her for the moment.
Oh, boy, I really hate that.
So now, if you listened last week, now we all know why the Pope went to the Orlandis on Christmas Eve with his weird statement about international terrorism, then nothing.
Yeah. Especially, right. Like, not knowing that information as a family, mm-hmm. as to why the Pope just shows up at your fucking house.
Just a phone call. Hey, the Pope's coming. He'll be there in a little bit. I'm sorry. What?
Oh, my God.
So, but, you know, it's the Orlandis have lived in the Vatican forever. So it's not like they don't have interaction with the Pope, but it's not like the Pope is coming over. That just doesn't happen.
It's still fucking, like, being in the Vatican, mm-hmm. you're just like, oh, there's the Pope just doing his stuff. And then it's very different from having a call and be like, guess who's coming to dinner? Mm-hmm. It's the Pope.
Yep.
You're like,
So then, December 15th, 1985.
Okay.
The Pope was out doing Pope shit. And he was going to a parish in Rome. And it is a parish where Mirella Grigori's mother goes. So she went. And that's where she recognized a man in the papal escort as the person who had been spending a good amount of time with her daughter at the bar before her disappearance.
Ooh.
And that man was Raul Bonarelli, the then deputy chief of the Gendarmerie of the Vatican City. It's like their police.
Yeah.
Okay? Not to be confused with the Swiss Guards, because that is two totally different things. So, in 1993, Bonarelli was questioned about Mirella by Judge Adele Rondo, but was later dismissed due to lack of evidence and due to the fact that by 1993, Mirella's mother couldn't recognize him out of a lineup anymore. So, her and Amela's... first page. So, Mirella and Emanuela's case was closed in 1997 due to lack of any new evidence. Over the years, questions were raised as to why the Vatican never opened an official investigation into Orlandi's disappearance, even though, I mean, especially since she's a Vatican citizen.
Yeah.
Like, never. The unofficial reply from the Vatican was that since she had disappeared on Italian territory, it fell under Italian jurisdiction.
Okay. Because the Vatican is its own thing.
It's its own country. It's its own state. It's its own everything.
Yeah.
However, on October 12th, 1993, Italian authorities recorded a telephone conversation between Raul Bonarelli and Monsignor Bertani, then chaplain of His Holiness to Pope John Paul II. Okay. So the Pope's chaplain.
There it is.
Apparently he has his own. I guess the Pope gets one, right? I mean, he can't just talk to himself.
So, and if he is directly talking to the Lord,
right?
More so than what is normal for the Pope.
Right.
I feel maybe he needs a go-between.
Yeah. So, and I'm just going to interject here real quick. If last week's story hurt your brain, this is going to get worse. So just put your thinking caps on and get all your thumbtacks and your red string out, because it's a lot. So, and that phone call took place the night before Bonarelli's questioning in relation to the Grigori case. In the phone call, Bertani ordered Bonarelli not to say anything to the Italian police. Fuck me. The Italian police about the Vatican's investigations into the Orlandi case, suggesting that the Vatican had opened an investigation without informing the Italian authorities.
No offense.
Oh.
Pass.
Yes, I know. I don't have the parts you like. So what? So first of all, why were they listening in to these phone calls, number one?
Yeah, if it, they're like, it's not our jurisdiction, hands clean, but also...
Right.
Just kidding. We're going to listen to everything. But I find it interesting
that, this was the Italian authorities that were recording the conversation. But like, and I assume it's because they were watching Bonarelli at the time.
Touche.
Because he was about to be questioned the next day.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so Father Bertani told Bonarelli, don't say shit about our investigations into this. So
got it. I did not bring my string. I forgot.
I know. So in the early 2000s, a journalist named Max Parisi, along with Judge Otello Lupacini, looked into 12 cases of young girls missing and murdered in Rome between 1982 and 1990. They hypothesized that all of them were victims of a serial killer due to the similarities of their murders and their proximity within the city. And they believed that both Mirella and Emanuela were victims of the serial killer as well.
Okay.
According to them, this man lured girls with job offers, like Avon, and then he kidnapped and killed them. So Gregori and Olandi would be the only two minors on this person's list of victims, and they were also the only ones whose bodies were never found. So a theory, sure, except they don't really quite... Other than the Avon and the job thing, yeah, it doesn't the rest of it, quite fit.
They don't really meet.
Right.
And tie up any nice loose ends. Not at all. It's just like, well, now we have several more questions.
Not at all. So then in April of 05, Pope John Paul II died at age 84.
Yes.
And wouldn't you know it, just a few weeks later, 22 years after Emanuela's disappearance, a reporter for an Italian TV show called Chi l'ha visto, which translates to who has seen, which I'm sure means something sort of like, investigative, whatever. I don't know the shows that we have that are like that.
Inside Edition.
That.
Which is aging me because right. That show has not been on the air in a long time.
Right. So,
but that's the first one I could think of.
Mm-hmm. So this reporter's name was Raffaella Notriale, and she got a very strange message in her voicemail. It was from an unknown man that said, regarding Emanuela Orlandi, to find the solution to the case, investigate who is buried in the crypt of Santa Apollinare Basilica. Basilica.
There it is.
God. And the favor Renatino did for Cardinal Poletti at the time.
Ooh.
Okay.
Be like, hey, buddy, what the fuck?
Right. Santa Apollinare Basilica. And the favor Renatino did for Cardinal Poletti at the time. So Raffaella looked it up and found that the basilica is in the center of Rome, in front of the Piazza Navona, and literally next door to Emanuela's music school.
Ooh.
Which is also the last place we all know that she had been seen. So Raffaella went to the basilica to see who the fuck was buried there. She goes to the crypt, and she sees a very large white marble tomb. And on the front of that tomb was a name, Enrico de Pedis. Raffaella knew that name. In fact, everyone in Rome knew that fucking name because Enrico de Pedis was known as the king of the underworld in Rome, being one of the bosses of the Banda della Magliana, an Italian criminal organization based in Rome during the late 70s and through the early 90s. And his nickname within the mafia?
Oh, no.
Renatino.
Oh.
Right.
There it is.
Yep. So... Well, Renatino was taken out February 2nd, 1990, and buried in Santa Apollinare Basilica, which is owned by the Vatican. And people just aren't buried there. It's where high-ranking Vatican officials, like cardinals and shit like that.
Yeah.
Not a violent mob
crime boss.
Unless you either somehow became a saint last minute... Or you've done a very large favor for the Vatican.
That sounds about right. And to quote the ladies of MFM, it goes all the way to the top.
Yep. So Raffaella was like, huh. So she goes to her trusty computer and looked up some shit, and she found that DePettis had been arrested in 1984 by tracking his girlfriend, a woman named Sabrina Minardi. So Raffaella goes to Sabrina's last known address, and she calls her boss and is like, hey, if you don't hear from me ever again, here's why. I'm going to go try to talk to this dead mafia boss's girlfriend. Okay?
Yeah, that'd be.
Right?
That'd be scary.
So she goes to the building, and she's told that Sabrina Minardi doesn't live there anymore. But she's not buying that, so.
That's what I would expect mm-hmm. someone to say.
Right.
That had that kind of
right.
relationship at some point in their life. And be like, yeah, they don't want to be found anymore.
Right.
And but so, I'm still looking.
Exactly. And in these apartment buildings, the person's name is on the outside of their apartment.
Yeah.
Okay. So she's like, So she goes to the doors that don't have names on them. And she knocks in every single one. Says who she is, who she's looking for. Nothing. Except one. She knocked on the door, said who she was and who she was looking for. A woman answered the door. And when she did, the woman, you know, she told her who she was and who she was looking for. The woman says, well, come in. She didn't say that's me. She just said, come in.
That would just make my heart drop to my asshole. Be like, oh my God, I know who you are, but I don't want to.
And then Raffaella was given the pat down of a lifetime.
I'll bet she fucking was.
So it was Sabrina.
Yeah.
And she was looking for wires.
Yeah.
So according to her, she and Enrico had met in a bar when she was 22 years old. And not long after that, she had seen in the papers that her new beau was wanted for 8 murders. She didn't realize who, you know. He was quite at first.
Yeah.
And he hadn't quite risen there yet. So she asked him about it. He denied it. And she was like, yeah, okay, cool. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, every monster has a beginning at some point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So let's fast forward 1983 to when Emanuela went missing. Sabrina was with Enrico, and according to her, at that time, they were using a lot of blow, her specifically.
It was the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. And she said that one night, Enrico's driver showed up with a young girl in the car, which she later would determine was Emanuela mm-hmm. Orlandi. Enrico said that they needed to take the girl out of town for a few days, so we're going to use your family's vacation home outside of Rome. And Sabrina was like, yeah, okay.
Yep. Okay. Whatever you say, it's not like I have a choice in the matter mm-hmm. either way.
Yep. And... she told Raffaella that one night not long after getting there, a woman named Adelaide showed up to take care of the young girl, who Sabrina says was locked up in the house and crying most of the time. And where was I? There we go. So Adelaide would show up and she would give the girl who was chained up in a room pills so she would be quiet, not cry, and she would give her showers and she would feed her and take her to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And she took care of the girl. So, according to Sabrina, this was around the 25th of June, which would have been 2 days after Emanuela went missing. And then when the poster started going up on the 29th was when Sabrina realized who the girl was that was being held captive in her family's home. But she said that at the time, Emanuela's hair had been cut shorter, but she knew it was her.
Yeah.
So 10 days after that, after the 29th, it was decided that the girl had to be moved. All these posters are up. It's getting a little too hot. So, and she told Raffaella then that to the best of her knowledge, Emanuela had been moved to an apartment in Monteverde on Pignatelli Street. Sometime after that, she and Enrico had been out one day, and he told her that they needed to go to Bar Giancolo. When they got there, a woman pulled up in the car with Emanuela inside, and Enrico handed Sabrina a set of keys, pointed to a parked green BMW, and told her that she had to drive the girl in that car to the Vatican petrol station. And when she got there, she would find a vehicle with a Vatican City plate, and she was to deliver the girl to that person. So Sabrina did as she was told, and on the drive, Sabrina thought about letting the girl go, but knew that she couldn't. So she asked the girl what her name was, and the girl just seemed to be so out of it, she just didn't respond at all. So when they got there to the petrol station, Sabrina saw a black Mercedes with a Vatican plate, and the door opened, and a priest wearing a cassock, you know, the long, the long priest dress, and a very wide-brimmed flat hat got out.
No, thanks.
She helped the priest get the girl into his car, and he was off. And that was that. Sabrina went back to the bar, met Enrico, and she said to him, "What kind of trouble have you got me into? That was Emanuela Orlandi. I don't need the posters in the street to tell me that. I'm not an idiot."
Ooh.
To which he responded, "Sabri, it's all a game of power. Don't you get that?" And according to Sabrina, Emanuela Orlandi was kidnapped by the Banda della Magliana on the orders of Archbishop Paul Marcinkus.
Okay.
So Raffaella believed Sabrina's story, and she ran it on Chila Visto, and the authorities reopened the inquiries into Emanuela's case. Sabrina Minardi was interviewed by the then deputy chief Giovanna Petrocca. And at first, she found the story really hard to believe. A priest in a cassock, wide-brimmed hat, sounds real sinister, that he would personally pick up a kidnapped girl. But then as Sabrina was questioned more, Petrocca found her story not only to be credible, but commendable.
Fair.
Sabrina took Petrocca down the exact route she took to the petrol station, took her to the petrol station where the exchange took place, and then took her to the last place that Emanuela had been held, the house on Pignatelli Street. So Chief Petrocca then looked into the house and found that at the time it had been owned by a woman named Daniela. Her last name has been complete. It was there, but it's been redacted. Yeah. So,
which makes much sense.
And Daniela had been an associate of the Banda della Magliana. So it was all adding up.
Okay.
So the authorities went and they searched that apartment. They found a secret wall.
Why wouldn't they have?
That led to a hidden room with a cell.
Of course it did.
So the Orlandi family was grateful that Emanuela's case was being looked into further, but they were also shocked at the turn it had taken. They had spent the last 22 years believing that her kidnapping had been an act of international and political terrorism. Andrea Purgatori knew better, though, and he also believed Sabrina Minardi's story, as did the Orlandi family, who now firmly believed that the mafia was involved. It was adding up.
I mean, right. Yeah, pretty hard to disagree
right.
with that.
Right. So in February of 2006, former Banda della Magliana member Antonio Mancini stated in an interview that he recognized the voice of Mario, one of the original callers from 1983, as a subordinate of Enrico De Pettis, named Ruffetto, which was corroborated by Sabrina Minardi. But why? Why the fuck would the mafia kidnap Emanuela Orlandi?
Yeah.
Well, hold on to your butts.
Yeah.
Hold on to your butts.
Tightly.
Yes. So the
shit's
answer.
About to get real fucking bananas.
So Andrea Purgatori believed.
Great name.
That it was someone trying to get a ransom from the Vatican itself.
Okay.
Now, in 1983, the Banda della Magliana was divided into two branches in Rome. The Testaccini, which was run by De Pettis, and the Maglianese, which was run by Maurizio Abbatino, until 1992 when he was arrested and became a police informant.
Okay. Would repeat those names to me one more time? Not the people's names, the organizations.
So the Banda della Magliana, the mob, was
and they
two
have
factions.
Yes, that's the one.
The Testaccini.
Yeah.
And the Maglianese.
There it is. That sounds like pasta dishes.
It does.
And I want them.
And they, yes. And I know I'm probably saying them wrong, so.
Sounds good to me.
So now Raffaella Fanelli is a journalist that's written predominantly about the mafia. And in 2017, after Abatino got out of the witness protection program, she got him to do an interview with her.
Ooh.
And she spoke with him about many, many things, but she did ask about Emanuela Orlandi, and he told her that it was about money. Money that the mafia had been given. Okay. Here we go. Money that the mafia had given Enrico De Pedis that went into the Vatican Bank.
Okay.
But it hadn't been paid back.
Okay.
And many people, including Andrea Purgatori, link this all back to one man. Roberto Calvi, a.k.a. God's Banker.
Oh.
And God's Banker was the CEO of Banco Ambrosiano, which was a Catholic bank tied to the Vatican Bank, which was run by an American archbishop named Paul Marcinkus.
It goes all the way to the fucking top.
And it doesn't stop.
No, there's more top.
There's a lot of top. So both the
y'all, there's always more top.
There it is. That's your one. There it is.
I like tops. So both the Pope and Bishop Marcinkus were very anti-communist, right? So for many reasons, obviously. So this part of the story is an insane rabbit hole that I'm going to do my very best to keep short. But it is all, unfortunately, connected. So the Pope was Polish and Catholic.
Yeah.
The communist Soviets were very atheistic. In fact, it was illegal to be Catholic at the time. Okay?
Okay.
In Poland.
There it is. That was my next question. I'm like, okay, but where specifically? Yes. Because my brain.
When Mamet Aliacha, who claimed that it was the KGB who trained him and had him attempt to assassinate the Pope on May 13th, 1981.
Yeah.
Well, the Pope decided that he was part of the Fatima prophecy from May 13th, 1917, which was when three teens claimed to have been visited by the Virgin Mary, and she told them that a Pope would be killed unless the Russian Empire was brought back to the Catholic faith. So after he was shot, John Paul II, he was like, hey, that's me. I'm that guy. I'm going to do that. I'm going to bring the Catholic faith back to not only my people, but to communist Russia where they can't be Catholic. So.
Well, that feels like a real big stretch, friend. But okay. I mean, I get it.
So
that's kind of the whole thing.
Right. So the Pope.
What?
The Pope.
I'm sorry.
I think Pope. She said the poop.
And Archbishop Marcinkus funneled money from the Vatican coffers to an anti-communist movement in Poland.
Okay.
To the tune of around $200 million.
Oh.
Now, Vatican is supposed to donate to churches and charities and shit. They are not supposed to donate to political causes.
That's what the good Lord told us.
Yes, so it had to be done secretly, which is where enters God's banker, Roberto Calvi, who just so happened to also be laundering money for the mafia.
I mean, that all tracks. But also, can I just say that as much as I really hate covering and learning about mafia things, they always have the best fucking nicknames.
I know.
God's banker? Come on! That's cool as hell!
It is.
How am I supposed to not be on that guy's side?
It really is. So
there's a character in The Sopranos named Polly Walnuts.
I know.
How do you not love that character?
You can't not. I haven't seen it, but boy, have I heard lots about Polly Walnuts. But that's a fucking God's banker. Damn it, that's so fucking cool.
So now
makes me a little bit mad.
Calvi was laundering money for the mafia. So he's like, hey, I've got an idea. I'm going to launder mafia money through the fucking Vatican.
Because why wouldn't you?
Right.
Hell yeah, by the way. Fuck yeah.
So.
But also, it kind of feels like maybe the Vatican's not super upset with that whole thing.
So, you see, the Vatican Bank is not subject to the foreign exchange control that all the other banks are.
Why would it be?
So, he sent the money through the Vatican Bank And that's where how he was.
Yeah.
Right. Except now remember, the Pope and Marcinkus are funneling money to Poland to fight communism.
There's a whole lot happening here.
That's why I said, hold on to your butts.
I know. And I know this story, but it's been a minute. And I just forgot how much happens here.
In fact, Sabrina Minardi stated that she would regularly take large duffel bags directly to Archbishop Marcinkus's office full of cash. And then that money went to the shell companies. She brought around $500 million, to be exact. That all went into shell companies in the Bahamas and shit. Now, this all worked out great until the spring of 1982 when the commissioner of the Bank of Italy had some questions. Because the math at Banco Ambrosiano wasn't mathing.
He's like, hey, brother cardinal, archbishop, what?
Yeah, and so God's banker couldn't answer any fucking questions about the bank's offshore accounts. So Banco Ambrosiano got shut the fuck down and went bankrupt immediately, owing billions to a lot of people.
Oh.
The mafia included. Because remember, he was washing his money through the Vatican. The Vatican was funneling money to Poland. And now they all just went tits up.
Yeah.
The mafia's going to want their money back.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck if you're the Vatican.
They don't.
And they tend to get a little punchy.
Yeah.
At best.
So
at worst.
And before
at best punchy. At worst, a little murdery.
Fair. No.
A lot murdery.
I was wrong.
In the middle, leg breaky.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
punching I would take.
Now, before he could really be questioned about fucking anything, Roberto Calvi, God's banker, disappeared.
I would have too.
You don't say.
And he was found on June 18th, actually, hanging from Blackfriars Bridge in London.
There it is. I was going to say, they may have found him, but he was not going to be very helpful.
Now, it was initially reported as a suicide assumed as such.
I mean.
But his family was like, oh, abso-fucking-lutely not. He is Catholic.
Yeah.
He did not kill himself, I promise you.
Yeah.
So, a forensic investigation was done, and it showed that Calvi's death was, in fact, very staged and not at all a suicide.
Yeah.
So when he was found, he had $16,000 in his pockets in varying currencies.
Huh.
$16,000 in U.S. dollars, Australian shillings, U.K. pounds, and Italian lire. There were also some very large stones put into his trouser and jacket pockets. So they tried to make it look like he was going to try to commit suicide. However, when they did the recreation of the forensics, there is no way, because there was scaffolding, because the bridge was being worked on, and he was hanging from down in there.
Okay.
From the bridge, though. But there's no way he would have had to go onto the scaffolding. His suit was clean.
Yeah, so it's not like he's crawling around construction.
No, and when the forensic dude redid it, the suit was filthy.
Yeah, there'd be no way.
Right. Because the bridge itself is filthy.
Yeah. And then when you're crawling around and setting up a noose.
Yeah.
And you feel like there's not really a good way to do that without getting dirty in that particular situation.
Mm-hmm. And it was stormy that night. Like, they could have hung him from any bridge. And it would have been very, very difficult. What they did was very, very difficult. They could have chosen somewhere easier, but they didn't. Why? Well, I'll tell you. It's believed that Calvi was murdered by the mafia and hung on Blackfriars Bridge specifically as a message, because the Blackfriars were Catholic monks and they were sending a message to the Vatican. The mafia wanted their money back. Now, why and how does any of this have to do with Emanuela Orlandi? Well, if you'll remember, at the time, there weren't many inhabitants in Vatican City, let alone those easily kidnappable, right? Emanuela was young enough to manipulate and to overpower, and she had a schedule that was easy to follow due to her school and music lessons outside of the Vatican gates.
Mm-hmm.
Where am I? There I am. So in February 2006, Former Banda della Magliana member Antonio Mancini stated in an interview that he, oh, I already said that, recognized the voice of, yep, Mario. We already talked about that. Cool. So Mancini also said that the gang kidnapped Orlandi in order to force the Vatican to pay restitution, although this theory would contradict Minardi's claims that Marcinkus was the instigator of the kidnapping.
Yes.
So at this point, the Orlandi family was like, okay, so it's the mafia, but okay, what the hell happened then?
Yeah.
What happened to Emanuela after she was given to that priest? Who was the priest? What happened to Mirella? Why didn't her body ever show up? Why didn't the callers ever ask for fucking money?
Yeah.
No one asked for fucking money.
Exactly. And if that was the
whole...
They
wanted Aliacha released.
Yeah.
Those were the only fucking demands made.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, well, if it's the mafia wanting their money back, they could have asked and at least gotten some.
Right.
For those two girls. Right. You think.
Right. And...
But...
But Emmanuel, like...
Going directly after the source... I don't know. Maybe that was...
Right.
Easier for the mafia?
Right. So...
I don't know.
I there's no denying they were involved.
Yeah.
But I don't...
To what
full extent. Yeah. This story is like, okay, so... But guess what? There's more.
Of course there is.
So over decades of investigations, the circumstances of Emanuela's disappearance had led many to doubt that she was abducted at all. First of all, the fact that she was last seen on one of Rome's busiest streets in broad daylight suggests that it's pretty unrealistic that she would have been taken by force without anyone noticing. Okay, maybe. So many believe that she may have left with someone she knew. But remember, there was the Avon guy.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, she was speaking with someone she felt had a high-paying job for her. So, you know, I agree that from that point on, shit gets real sketch with the kidnapping demands. Nothing made any damn sense. And the only thing they provided were the photocopy of her music school ID, which was available in the music school archives, and an exam receipt, which is easy to access if you were under Vatican jurisdiction. Okay, so in July 1993, a cardinal by the name of Silvio Oddi made some ambiguous statements about Emanuela Orlandi in an interview. He claimed that in the days following her disappearance, that he'd overheard a conversation between two Vatican gendarmes who said that they saw Emanuela returning to the Vatican that night, the night she supposedly disappeared, in a luxury car. And said that she left the Vatican gates 20 minutes later, getting into the same car and leaving. So the two gendarmes were not able to see who was driving the car. And Cardinal Oddi was then questioned by the judge Adele Rando, who had looked into Mirella's murder, about the rumor. But he wasn't able to reveal the identity of the two gendarmes. He didn't. He just overheard in passing this conversation. Was like, huh. Okay. So, another Italian journalist, because there's a lot in this story, who had followed the case closely since the early 2000s, was Pino Nicotri.
Okay.
Nicotri.
Sure.
Yes.
Any of them.
Uh-huh. Who, based on all the judicial documents, felt that the kidnapping theory was bullshit. Nicotri claimed that in 2005, he had come to know from a source inside the Vatican that Emanuela had died accidentally the night of her disappearance during, and I quote, a convivial meeting. Yeah. With some high-ranking Vatican figures in an apartment in Via Monte di Gallo near the Vatican.
Well, I don't like that.
Nor should you. So, according to Nicotri, Orlandi had been involved in this type of meeting for some time before her disappearance, but on the night of June 22nd, 1983, she died accidentally. Nicotri also stated that the theory of kidnapping by international terrorists was made up to divert attention from the fucking truth, while the hypothesis of the involvement of the Banda di Magliana was made up by mass media after the phone call to Cila Visto. He claimed that Sabrina Minardi was giving false testimony, and according to him, the Italian Secret Service knew that she was lying and just went with it. In May 2012, a name that we here are all familiar with, the Pope's exorcist, Father Gabriel Amorth, claimed that Orlandi was the victim of a group of ecclesiastical pedophiles, stating that members of the Vatican police were recruiting young girls for sex parties and officials of an unnamed foreign embassy were implicated. Somehow, to me, I think we're getting a little bit more onto something.
Mm-hmm. Also, I had to look it up because I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I guess
it's sexy time.
No, convivial meeting. It's a lively atmosphere of or relating to social events where people can eat, drink, and talk in a friendly way with others.
So, except I don't think that's what he was referring to.
That is the definition. So maybe something in translation, but
it's translation.
Yeah,
it's translation.
It's like, hey, friendo.
Right. So. Because now they're talking about these sex parties.
Yeah, and well, right? There was that guy she was always with, too.
Mm-hmm. So, no, I don't think... Well, I'll get to what I think here in a bit. So, in 2013, a journalist named Fabrizio Percanacci, a crime journalist at Corriere della Sera, got a call from a man named Marco Ansetti. And Marco claimed that he was the American.
Okay.
And he was Emanuela Orlandi's kidnapper, and that he was ready to tell his story.
Sure.
So, there are a lot of things in a story that panned out, including when he was asked. His location was almost pinpointed by the authorities during the phone call. They almost got the American one time, and he was asked if he knew what that time was. And he said, yes, I was in a train station and the horn blew. I hung up immediately because they knew where I was.
Yeah.
And he wasn't wrong.
Oh,
that was true. That was the one time that they almost caught the American. And it was from a phone call in Rome's central station. And the authorities knew that because they had tried to trap the American by shutting off several pay phones. So they knew.
Okay.
They knew which call or which pay phone it was coming from.
Got it.
And he was right.
Weird.
Okay. So, all right. Sure. So, okay. So, he may very well have been the American, but why kidnap Emanuela and on whose behalf? Behalf. I'll take half.
But suddenly, Jeremy Irons has entered the chat.
Well, according to Ansetti, he was a member of... Oh, sorry. According to Ansetti, it was members of the Vatican. Not the Pope, but lower-ranking priests and... more administration types. And according to Andrea Purgatori, the Vatican has many different factions inside. He said it's like Game of Thrones. And according to Ansetti, this all goes back to Mehmet Ali Acha again. Which, okay. But then Ansetti doubled down and said that he also abducted Mirella Gregori, whose family did later say that they had gotten calls from a man speaking in Italian with an American accent that had told them exactly what Mirella had been wearing the day she was abducted.
Okay.
Again, why?
Yeah.
Well, according to Ansetti, it all had to do with the pardon of Mehmet Ali Acha and that they needed two girls of different citizenships, one Italian, one Vatican. So Mirella's disappearance was to put pressure on the president of the Italian Republic, who could grant the pardon. And Emanuela's was to put pressure on the Vatican so that the Pope would put pressure on the Italian state. Okay. All to get Ali Acha released. So on September 8th, 1983. So he said that if the Gregori family wanted Mirella free, that they would have to speak to the president, Pertini, at the time. For the appeal of Ali Acha. So that's when and why Bettini, if you'll remember in the last story, he linked the two girls together.
Gotcha.
And said, you know, they've been abducted. We want them released. Well, that was, according to Ansetti, that was the plan all along. And he told the Gregori family that that's what they had. That's how that came about.
Ah.
Right.
It's like a whirlpool of conspiracies.
Yeah.
All over.
Again, what the fuck? So according to Ansetti, the last time he saw the girls, they were very much alive And I have to turn my page here. And he really didn't have much fuck all to say about what happened after the abduction itself, other than it was political.
Yeah.
He said okay. that he only had that part of it. It came from the Vatican. They needed one girl from Rome, mm-hmm. one girl from the Vatican, so that the Pope would put pressure on the Italian president, and the Italian president would put pressure on the authorities, and Aliaca would get his pardon.
Sure.
Okay.
In my brain, they need one from each to confuse everybody.
Right.
And gum up the works.
Gum it up. So, was Marco Anchetti legit? Was Sabrina Minardi legit? Anchetti's credibility on the Olandi case has been questioned, and there was a telephone analysis done by audio and digital forensics experts that confirmed that the American who called the Orlandi family in July through December of 1983 was not Marco Anchetti.
Okay.
But they also found during this analysis that there was more than one American.
Uh-huh.
And that the one calling the Orlandis from September through December 1983 and that had called the Gregori family was Marco Anchetti.
Okay.
So July to December, not him. September to December, him. There were two of them calling.
Got it.
So let me ask y'all this. Who the fuck was not involved
all
in
of
this clusterfuck?
All of them.
Right. So now the Orlandis believe that the two cases are totally separate and Andrea Purgatori doesn't disagree. Because according to Marco Anchetti, he created the Orlandi case, meaning that when the American was making these phone calls, mm-hmm. that's when the whole Orlandi case, the Mehmet Aliaca, the storyline, everything began.
Okay.
So now they're thinking that the Gregori and Orlandi cases are two totally separate fucking things.
Kind of like he started one mm-hmm. and then this other thing just happened mm-hmm. and he ran with it.
Yeah.
So all of it could be at least partially true mm-hmm. somehow, because I have a feeling that mm-hmm. his side of it would not be of any interest to the mafia.
Right.
And vice versa.
Right.
So.
So John Paul dies. So now we're going into 2013.
Yes.
Pope Francis was elected. So John Paul dies. Benedict takes over. He quits. Now we've got Francis. And a few weeks after he assumed the papacy, he held a mass in the parish of Santa Anna, which was Emanuela's parish in the Vatican. So Pietro, his mother and sister, went. So he meets the new pope, who said only four words to him.
Il Papa.
Emanuela is in heaven. So, according to Pietro, he said, his words froze my blood. To hear a pope say Emanuela is dead. If a head of state says Emanuela is in heaven, then he knows something we don't. So Pietro said that after that, he made numerous requests to meet with Pope Francis to ask more questions, but that he could not get an audience. Now, mind you, the Orlandis have served the popes for 100 fucking years, and he couldn't get an audience with the pope. So.
Who does this guy think he is?
Right?
The pope.
The pope. Wait. Then in 2016, the Vatican got rocked by one of their biggest scandals to date, and that is VataLeaks. Kind of like WikiLeaks, but with the Vatican.
Got it.
Fatty leaks.
I do not like the sound of that.
I know. That's why I had to say it. I was like, ugh. So, essentially, it was a huge leak of secret confidential documents exposing financial corruption and abuse. But it also brought out a new twist in the Orlandi case, because one of the documents stolen from the Vatican's cabinets was apparently a secret 197-page dossier.
Oh, shit. Fuck.
About Emanuela Orlandi.
Oh, bother.
Yeah. So, next journalist, Emiliano Fittipaldi, is an investigative journalist that's investigated the Vatican for years. And in 2016, he wrote a tell-all book on the Vatican's many financial crimes.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm. Which ended him being up one of three journalists to go on trial for VataLeaks.
God, I really hate the way that sounds.
During the trial, however, a priest who was a secretary for the Vatican's Prefecture of Economic Affairs, testified that in 2014, someone broke into the building using keys. They actually didn't break in. They used keys.
So they entered the building.
Except they then used a blowtorch to break into one of the 15 safes.
Uh-oh.
And they took some very specific documents concerning what the priest called matters of the past, saying that there were documents regarding political scandals, financial investments, the ties with Freemasonry. Well, some of the documents...
And some more, I'm sure.
Ended up getting sent back. There was a package sent back.
Huh. Return to sender.
Return to sender.
No, thank you. I want no part of it.
Yep. And in the package that was sent back, there were some documents, including 5 pages of the dossier on Emanuela Orlandi.
Uh-oh.
Now, of course, the Vatican immediately said that it was a fake, though they never explained what it was doing in the Vatican's safe.
Yeah, that would be a really good question.
Yeah, this trial for VatiLeaks lasted 8 months. Turns out it was the Pope's butler all along. But Fittipaldi, now wanting to know what the hell was up with the Orlandi dossier, he's like, huh, because that's the first he had heard about. And he knew about the case.
Yeah, but...
No one knew there was a dossier in the Vatican.
Yeah.
Remember, they're like, oh, no, that's Italian jurisdiction. We don't...
Yeah, we have nothing to do with this. Not our circus, not our monkeys.
Nope, not at all, except it is your circus, and it is your fucking monkey, because she's a citizen.
Yeah.
So, he wanted to know what the hell was up with that. So, he went after all the contacts he had within the Vatican, and he finally got someone to talk to him. And that person ended up connecting him to a source. And that source handed over a folder that contained 5 photocopied pages dated March 28th, 1998. Okay. So now the dossier itself, and it says on there, had 197 pages, like I said, but these were the only ones that were either sent back or that were given to him.
Okay.
So Fittipaldi was now looking at a cover page of a document, and the title at the top stated, This is a list of expenses sustained by the Vatican State for activities related to the citizen Emanuela Orlandi.
Well, I don't love that.
Okay. And it was dated March of 1998.
Yeah. She's been gone for a while at that point.
So, according to the document, she had been very much fucking alive and living in London from 1983 to 1997.
What?
The dossier was written by a cardinal, Lorenzo Antonetti, who at the time was the head of APSA, which was the institution that handles the whole of the Vatican's finances. And in this dossier, it says, in his writing, the domestic removal of the Vatican citizen, Emanuela Orlandi.
Ooh, that's sinister as hell.
Mm-hmm. Meaning that the Vatican has always known her whereabouts and that the Vatican had been supporting her the whole time. There was a list of tuition fees, medical bills, food, boarding, travel expenses. And guess what, y'all? There was an address.
Great.
176 Clapham Road, London, England.
Foggy London town.
Which happened to be a Catholic youth hostel for girls that was connected to the Vatican.
Shocking.
Fittipaldi tried to find if she'd been living there, but her name wasn't found, which isn't surprising.
No.
Because her name would not have been used.
Yeah.
So the Vatican was and has always been defensive when asked about Emanuela Orlandi's case. And with the discovery of these documents, they were no different. They denied the existence of any internal documents and stated, as they always have regarding Emanuela, we had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I've said more than once on this podcast that truth is often stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
I also believe that in cases like this where there's just so much shit, so many strings, so many brain hurts, and just all around weird shit like this, it usually ends up being an Occam's razor situation, meaning that the simplest answer is usually the correct one.
Mm-hmm.
So I've talked about the Pope every single Italian intelligence agency, the KGB, the Grey Wolves, Turkish, Ali Acha, the fucking mafia, literally every clandestine option possible. Well, in October of 2022, Netflix released a documentary called Vatican Girl, in which this is where I got the majority
there you go.
Of my information from. And in this documentary, a new anonymous informant came forward.
Oh.
A woman who was a friend of Emanuela's. And she had been too afraid to come forward before. Well, she said that the week before Emanuela disappeared, she had called and told her that she needed to see her. So the girls, Emanuela told her she needed to talk to something that it, about something that had happened. So they met up that day. And at first, her friend thought that Emanuela maybe was going to tell her that she'd met a boy or something exciting. Mm-hmm. But she said that once she saw Emanuela, she knew something was wrong. She said that she seemed scared and just out of sorts. Well, Emanuela told her that one day she had been walking through the Vatican Gardens alone, as she often did, and that a man who she would not name, that was very close to the Pope, had done something to her sexually.
Oh.
And that this man had molested her several times. Oh. So, what if everything Sabrina Minardi said was true, but it had not shit all to do with the Banco Ambrosio or God's Banker, but was instead a favor called in to Enrique de Pettis by someone in the Vatican to cover up a sex scandal?
Yeah.
The most simple explanation and a tale as old as time. High-ranking or important man covering up some fucking bullshit that he's done.
That sounds pretty bog standard for the Catholic Church.
Because remember, Sabrina handed Emanuela over to a priest at the Vatican petrol station.
Uh-huh.
Okay, then what? Well, what if he took her to London, put her in this hostel, and that's where she lived the rest of her life? She didn't protest. They probably made her feel like shit for what was done to her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right? So Fittipaldi then found on the fifth and last page of the document that there was a final expense item for 21 million lire, which it's a few thousand dollars at the time, under general activities and transfer to the Vatican City State with relative handling of the final procedures, which to him translated that Emanuela had died in London and that someone had been tasked with bringing her body back home to the Vatican for burial, right under the noses of her family, with no fucking word.
Ugh.
Now, if any of that's true, it's fucked. It's really fucked. So fucked that both Andrea Purgatori and Emiliano Fittipaldi were like, this is monstrous.
Yeah.
But would it surprise any of you?
No.
Because it sure as fuck wouldn't surprise me.
No.
So when the Orlandis found out about the document, Pietro hired a lawyer. But not just any lawyer. He wanted someone not afraid to take on the Vatican, so he went to a woman named Laura Scrow, who had been one of the attorneys at the Vatileaks trial. Laura started at the beginning, and she said it took her 6 months to go through Emanuela's file and read all of the paperwork and reports, starting back in 1983. And she said that through it all, what stood out to her the most was the absolute lack of cooperation from the Vatican.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the very beginning of my tale, which was October 2018, when bones were found while renovating a basement in Vatican City. Well, they did not belong to Emanuela or Mirella, and according to the test results, they belonged to a Roman man who had died between 190 and 230 AD. That was released. Then in the summer of 2018, Laura Scrow got a letter. It was a white envelope with no return address, and in it was a photo of what appeared to be a tomb with a statue of an angel. And on a white piece of paper was one sentence that read, "If you want to find Emanuela, search where the angel is looking."
Ooh.
So, if the Vatican expense report wasn't bullshit, and Emanuela was brought back to the Vatican for burial, this could be it, right? So the Vatican only has two burial sites. One is the Church of Santa Anna, and the other is the Teutonic Cemetery. So Laura called Pietro, told him about the letter. They go to look for the tomb. They started at the Teutonic Cemetery, and sure as shit, they found the fucking angel. And the grave belonged to... Oh, shit.
Do you need help?
Do you speak German?
I can get my way through it.
Princess Sophie of Hohenlohe-Waldenburg-Bernstein.
Give it to me.
Take it.
What?
No? Yes?
I gotta find it.
Princess.
Oh, found it.
Mm-hmm. Princess. Thank you.
Hohenlohe, Waldenburg.
There you go.
Bassenstein.
Yeah. Princess of that. Princess of
There's
that.
There's two more names that she put in pink for some reason that are going to be just as hard.
It's because it's just, yeah, that's the copy and paste. So in February of 2019, Laura wrote to the Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin and basically said, and this is translated from Italian into English, so Emanuela is buried in your house. Now you have to answer. Which is basically saying, you guys get it.
Yeah.
So, and within 2 months, unexpectedly, they responded. The Holy See said that they would not only open that tomb, but they're going to open the one next to it as well, which supposedly contained the remains of Duchess Charlotte Frederica of Mecklenburg-Schwerin. And according to Andrea Purgatori, this was unprecedented. This is hallowed ground. The Vatican doesn't just go opening graves. That's not a thing.
No.
But they're like, yep, no problem. We got this. So the exhumations took place on July 11th, 2019, with the Orlandi family watching. Top of the tomb was broken open. Beneath it is a small room. They go down and open the grave, which was empty. And I mean empty.
Well, that's...
No grave.
That's very...
No bones.
Concerning.
No nothing.
And not the good kind of no bones.
Nope. No bones. And it was the same for the second grave. No princesses, no duchess, no Emanuela. The Vatican's like, oh gosh, we got to look into that. We don't know where
Weird.
They are. Yeah. So Laura Scrow 100% believes that the tomb tip was because someone in the Vatican knows the truth and that they are still being blackmailed about it, which is why any and all information about Emanuela comes out cyclically.
Yeah.
And sure as shit, after the tomb opening, another player came forward. Archbishop Carlo Vagano. Vagano went to Scrow's office himself and told her that in June of 1983, he was the secretary for the deputy secretary of state at the time. And on the 22nd of June, 1983, the day Emanuela disappeared, around 8 p.m., there was a phone call to the office, which he answered. And he said that it was Father Pancrioli, who was the head of the Vatican's press office. He told Vagano that they had just gotten an anonymous call that had come from a man that stated that he had kidnapped Emanuela Orlandi. Well, her disappearance hadn't even been reported to the authorities yet. So if that's true, then the Vatican knew all along without telling the family. It would also show that the Vatican was the target for the blackmail because it wasn't the family that was being called, but the Vatican press office. So now let's think about this. If someone wanted to blackmail the Vatican, why kidnap a young girl?
Yeah.
Why not a high-ranking cardinal or a priest? No. The only thing that makes sense is that Emanuela herself had a secret that the Vatican had to keep quiet. So, Emanuela Orlandi has been missing for 41 years, and she remains the Vatican's only missing citizen. Despite two inquiries and repeated requests, the Vatican has never revealed the nature of its negotiations with the kidnappers on that night. Ercole Orlandi died in 2004, never knowing what had become of his daughter and believing that his family had been betrayed by those that they had served for over 100 years. Maria Orlandi, as of last year, was still very much alive in her mid-90s and still living in the Vatican, in their apartment. As for Pietro and the rest of the Orlandis, they've stated that they will never stop looking for Emanuela, and they know that the answers to her disappearance are within the Holy See. Andrea Purgatori died in a Rome hospital on July 19th, 2023.
Wow.
After a very short and sudden illness. His death is being looked at as potential negligent manslaughter. And as of last week, a statement's been made that the truth about his death will come out sometime this summer.
Okay.
And that is the story of Emanuela Orlandi.
That's like the Vatican girl. 150 stories.
Yep.
That was almost the length of an entire episode.
I know. I should have split it in two, but I was just like, fuck it.
It's okay. I mean, you technically did split it in two.
I meant three.
No.
But, yeah.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah. So.
This is one of those cases, like we said when we left, that you're like, oh, yeah, this will be straightforward. And then you start, and you're like, well, fuck me.
Do you have
myself
a 39-page story as well?
You've been here long enough to know better than to ask me that question.
I know, I don't.
Remember the three-part I did on Marlis Spanicky?
Uh-huh.
That was one for me. Where I was like, this will be quick.
No, I'm not.
He's asking about today.
Today, no. Thank I thought you meant in general.
No, I.
No, but.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I know I should have broken it up into another two.
Well, okay.
And I thought about
it.
Wasn't
a criticism. I was just like holy shit.
Yeah, no.
So.
That's information.
My sources, many a wiki.
Yep.
BBC.com. Newsweek.com, Molly Mitchell, State.gov, Medium, Tina Viju, WashingtonPost.com, Harrison Smith, CNN.com, Barbie Latza Nadeau, and Sophie Tano, three separate articles, The Vatican Girl, Netflix, and AgenciaNova.com. So, yeah, I think that she was being molested by someone close to the Pope.
Yep.
They were afraid she was going to tell.
Yeah.
They hired the mafia to get rid of her.
Chaos ensues.
Like I said, it's a whirlpool of conspiracies.
And I think that the mafia kidnapped her.
Yeah.
And if that dossier is correct, once she was handed over to that priest, she was sent to London.
Yeah.
The end. Her body's still never been found, though.
Yeah.
So.
Unfortunately.
Yep. Neither has Mirella Grigori's.
Or I'm going to assume different reasons.
Yep.
But hard to say if we'll ever know since the Vatican is
the Vatican. Does Vatican things. Yeah.
The Vatican.
So the butler died too in 2020.
Okay.
Butler died. Illness, I'm assuming the Rona. Or was it?
Hard to say.
Mm-hmm. Andrea Purgatori, very fast, sudden illness that didn't seem to be treated correctly.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. So they're looking into that, too.
Well.
So, who knows?
Someone should.
Yeah.
Just not someone inside the Vatican.
Nope. There is more to the story, and the Vatican did open in 2023. They decided to finally open an inquiry of their own. It's bullshit. You can look it up yourself.
Oh, that's great.
It's horseshit. They blame the family. Move on.
It's like when they let the police investigate their own officers. It's like...
Yeah, they blame the family.
What
they
the
blamed,
fuck?
They blamed an uncle. It just...
Of course they
look
did.
Look it up. I yeah.
Yeah.
The amount of times that you look at fucking letting organizations be in charge of their own investigations and then just failing miserably.
Shocking.
We talked about one yesterday.
Miserably.
Nickelodeon.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I won't go into detail, but Quiet on Set on Max is a fucking bummer.
Yeah.
It's real rough.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. All right, well, so.
Oh, real quick.
Oh, God.
That's what I think happened.
I agree. I feel like someone was molesting her, maybe got her pregnant.
Potentially, yeah.
I don't know. That just feels inappropriately appropriate.
Listener Anna.
Yeah.
Messaged me.
Okay.
After last week's episode.
Yes.
Saying, I'll say it because Z won't. Fuck the Catholics. So, there you go, Anna.
Oh, you know, just like with any religion, there's good and bad, you know.
Mostly bad with Catholics.
I will say
I happen to know a great Catholic.
Same. Oh, I do too, but historically, they're
the organization kind of the worst. Itself.
Yeah, they're bad.
That's how I feel with organized religion in general.
Oh, terrible. Sure. Terrible, horrible people, clearly.
Yeah.
There's great people in most religions, but the Catholics historically have been pretty fucking bad to other bad. People throughout history.
Terrible bad.
Really bad.
So.
Also, the people in power, though.
Oh, sure.
The not the, generally, the actual members of said church, but like this, mm-hmm. you know.
Sure, I mean, the
if we're throwing out blankets to make statements.
Yes, here's counterpoint. Everybody says this current pope is the cool pope. He's mm-hmm. kind of likes gays and has said some cool stuff and doesn't... He's still endorsing pedophiles. So, you know, we can say that they're cool all they want, but...
Yeah, there were a lot of players in this one. There's a lot of deflection.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I think that the money laundering, mafia money thing was totally separate.
Yeah, it was its own thing.
But that they were involved in taking Emanuela.
Yeah.
So...
Agreed. And yeah. I feel like that's also probably why that one guy ended up in the super exclusive fancy basilica, where uh-huh. only Catholic important people are buried.
Yep.
It was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, just hot fucking
mess. So, and he got taken out by his own organization, I'm assuming, for losing all that money.
Probably.
Yeah, it's all like... peripherally connected in that aspect, but yeah. Just fucking wild story.
Loose threads connecting some of it.
Wild fucking story.
Yeah, it's, and again, will we ever know what really happened? Hard probably to say, because the Vatican is the Vatican.
Vatican's the Vatican.
And all Vaticans are bastards.
And in this story, all roads lead to the Vatican.
Yeah, you're welcome for that. I just, anytime I hear somebody say anything about the Pope, I just think about... one of George Carlin's bits where he says, I have as much authority as the Pope, I just don't have as many people who believe it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what?
You're not wrong. All right.
I too have something for us.
I love that.
On this day.
In this Denny's?
Not the Vatican one.
Not the Vatican Denny's.
Sure.
But in this one.
In the context of your story.
Why are you Swedish?
I don't know.
Moons over Miami.
I don't know.
Are you trying to be Italian?
I think so. Oh, maybe I'm the American.
I think so.
Yeah.
Especially right now, yes.
You are nothing if not the most American person. That's okay, though.
Yeah, I do have a story for this day and this Denny's.
Okay.
Specifically.
Our Denny's.
Our Denny's. Denny's.
The Denny's of Gaston House.
The Denny's that lives inside us all.
Episode name.
That sent it to me so I don't forget. I've been writing some down, but that one was pretty good. I know people have asked if we could get that on shirts. I was like,
I don't know.
Maybe.
Potentially.
We'll see.
What? Get what?
Not on this Denny's.
Oh. Well, you know.
I'm like, oh, we can try.
We can try.
We can try and see what happens. So
if we can, especially if we can get the Denny's logo.
That was my dream. Yes.
That happen.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
We'll give it a whirl.
Well, mostly it was because people were like, well, what about copyright infringement? And I'm like, I don't know if Denny's really cares that much. But we'll see. Stranger things have indeed happened.
And here's the thing. If we put it up and you buy it.
Yeah.
And then they tell us to take it down. Those shirts are yours.
You already bought them.
You already have them.
Yeah.
We've already been paid for them.
Yeah.
The illegal part is done. Everything that happens before and after. We just have to stop.
Just take it down.
They'll just give us a cease and desist and that's it, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Before that, Redbubble will probably be like, hey, yeah, no.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
But have you seen the things that are on Redbubble?
There's several infringy fucking things there.
Every which way you look. So
I'm infringy.
We'll look.
We're all infringy.
I like being infringy.
We'll look into it. But
infringy.
I'm very scared of you when you're Swedish at me. I don't like it.
Dinga dinga durgan.
I don't like it. I don't want to be here when this is happening.
You don't have to be. Dinga dinga durgan.
I know, but getting up is a whole ordeal, and I don't want to do that right now. I'm a little bit comfortable.
I'm a little bit rock and roll.
Oh, no. Danielle's story was so long, it's made us go insane. It's not the first time it's happened. Usually it's my fault. Anyway.
Any hoops.
Poopy hoopies.
No thanks. That's gross. But guess who's got two thumbs? Poops. Oh, Christ almighty.
Right. What did you say?
You guys continue. I'll just wait.
No, you go. What kind of poops? You go. I'm getting hungry. Hoop-shaped poops.
Hooped-shaped. I think that's just poops.
Oh, yeah.
In a circle.
What? All right. Start, please. No.
I'm trying.
Well, try harder.
Oh, boy.
I did, and it didn't help. Yeah, no. It did nothing. It's still but, gonna... yeah, because guess who's got two thumbs? Still feels like shit. Felt like shit all weekend. And had a weird exchange that inspired today's story. It's this maw. Right here.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, bitch. We're recording.
Oh, my God.
I'm so glad.
One of or both of us would have killed you.
I know.
I will get to the inspiration at the end. But until then, I'm going to share another list of some creepy doppelganger encounters.
I love it.
Thank you.
A nice short list.
Or, in my brain, and what I wrote down, some doppelbangers. You're welcome.
Ayo!
Bang a lady that looks like you?
No.
Is that your strange interaction?
No, no. Just bangers, because they're great stories.
Oh, okay.
Get with the times, Grandpa. I said it, and I meant it.
Is banging not a word for sex anymore?
It has more than one meaning.
Oh, sure.
So why are you arguing?
I'm not arguing. I'm just questioning.
The devil has enough advocates. No, thank
there
you.
There was no advocating. Now you're arguing.
How do you like it?
I think the Vatican has tainted this room.
Oh, the Vatican's tainted. Let's go. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Woo!
So, let's get started.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
The first one, I was outside behind the garage burning trash, and my sister was burning old school papers, and she went into the house, came back terrified, because my doppelganger came out of my room and asked her if she wanted to play video games with him/it, and she knew I was burning trash the whole time.
Goo. No.
No thanks. Next. I recently took a walk in the woods of my hometown, and something followed me back. It looks exactly like me and watches through the windows of my bedroom at nighttime.
Fuck no!
No.
That's the hardest of fucking passes.
Yeah, I hate it. I saw myself walking/floating down a crossroad across the street once, wearing a long flowing white gown, when I was walking home, stone cold sober, from a friend's house late at night. It was quite a freaky experience. It was 34 years ago. Eventually, I'm sure I'll die like everyone else, but I've made it this far. I needed that one to make me feel a little bit better. Eventually, I'm sure I'll die like everyone else.
Sure.
As if there's an option.
Right.
To not. And if whoever did that, please let me know what that option is. I have questions.
Same.
Are
you a vampire? Can you make me one?
Maybe that's why you saw yourself walking/floating in a white flowing gown.
Right.
It was vampire you. Mm-hmm. This happened about 20 years ago, but I had gotten sick at work, so I went home. It was the middle of the day, so nobody was home. I lived with my mom, dad, brother, and baby daughter. When I got there, all was quiet, and I went straight to my room, pushed the door mostly shut, and laid down. I was facing the door, and I saw the shadow of feet walk by, coming from the direction of my mother's room, and was like, what the hell? He should have been in school, and it was weird, because I know for a fact his door was open and no one was in there. I got up and walked out to see what was happening, and I didn't see him, but the back door was open.
Ew.
I ran out onto the patio just in time to see him going around the corner of the house. It was him. I got a good look. I called out to him, but he didn't stop, so I ran to catch up with him. And when I rounded the corner, he was going around to the front of the house now.
Oh, my God.
I ran to the front, and when I got there, there was no one. He couldn't have gotten anywhere without me seeing it or hearing him. I walked around the house a few times and then searched inside. No brother. I was so confused and sick on top of that, so I just stayed on the couch wondering what the fuck had just happened. About the time I hear the bus outside, so I go out to see what? My brother getting off the bus with his friend. There's no way that that was my brother that I was chasing. But it was? We've always been tight, and I would recognize him anywhere.
Goo. That's not great.
Don't love it.
Hate it, in fact.
Very much so. This one says, a few seconds in a busy mall, me in the crowd looking at me. It was a weird day, ended up narrowly avoiding involvement in a fatal car crash.
Oh.
So yeah, this person just went to the mall, saw themselves staring at themselves in a crowd, and then almost got into a fatal car accident.
Nope.
Boo!
Good with not that.
I'm going to say it with a Maryland accent. Boo! Heavy on the EW. I say it to the Tooch all the time.
Ah.
Yeah.
Tooch is loose.
The Tooch is loose. Always and forever. Especially in this Denny's. Mm-hmm. This happened when I was 8 years old. I saw my dad in the bathroom toweling himself off after a shower. But the problem is that he was supposed to be in the office at that time. So I asked him, Dad, when did you come home? He didn't say anything. I asked again, and he closed the bathroom door in my face. I went from that room, didn't think much of it. 20 minutes later, Mom gave me and my little brother lunch. So we three people, Mom, me, and my little brother, sat to eat lunch.
We three people.
I asked Mom, why aren't we waiting for Dad? She laughed and said, why would we? He's going to come home later. I told her, but Dad is home. Then explained to her. We searched the entire house but couldn't find him. Creepy, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
After eating, me and my little brother fell asleep. Mom stayed awake to watch TV. I woke to Mom's scream. I rushed to look for her, found her before that bathroom door. She hugged me and couldn't talk. I looked at the bathroom. It was empty. Asked Mom what happened. She said she saw Dad. Dad was there, but why would he appear out of nowhere? She asked him when did he come home, and said she saw that the thing that looked like my dad made a horribly creepy face, so she screamed.
Ew.
And in no time, I was there, and that thing disappeared. Later, Dad came at night, or came home after work, and we told him everything. I don't remember what we did after that, but we moved out.
Oh, shit.
Like, oh. Hate it.
Yeah, a lot. Hate
it. My partner, who passed away in 2020, had a VW van. He decorated it with stickers on the side windows. Last year, I was driving through my village, and at some point, I looked in the rearview mirror to see a van that looked just like his following behind me.
My village.
It caught my attention because the van had been sold to a family who live 4 hours away. I slowed down for the van to catch up to me so I could get a better look, and my heart dropped when I noticed the driver looked exactly like my past partner. Not only that, the passenger looked exactly like me.
Ew!
We finally came to a crossroads where I turned left and they went straight on. I could see the same stickers as they drove over. I absolutely freaked out and pulled my car over to calm down. Extremely weird, and I think about it every day.
No, thank you.
I am going to think about it, too. Every day. Person on the internet, because no.
Thanks. No thanks.
So, my story wouldn't actually come full circle for many years. When I was a teen, I grew up in the Heights of Houston, and I would walk to school every day in the 90s. I only skipped school twice, and both times I was caught. Back then, there was an alert system that called to notify whatever parental contact number was listed if a child didn't show up for school. So, both times I made sure to attend first and second period, so I didn't set off the alert system. Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Smart. This was the way, they say. It was a huge school and nobody had time to call personally if a student wasn't in class for roll call after second period. Anyway, I was caught on both occasions, I was caught because on both occasions people who knew me well saw me in places I shouldn't have been, including my father. My father said he saw me walking in the opposite direction of school the first morning. He would go out for coffee and a paper and return home before leaving for work. He followed me, and then I disappeared. He called the school, and they said I was there, but it bothered him so much that he called again later in the day and learned I wasn't in class that afternoon. So when I got home, grounded. Because, you know, you got.
Grounded.
The second time, I was seen by staff members at a cafe that a friend of his owned.
Oh, shit.
We frequented it on the weekends. The staff and owner said I sat at the end of the bar but wouldn't order anything, though I interacted superficially. Knowing I should be in school, the owner called my father. I got home that afternoon, grounded.
Grounded.
Only two times I skipped, both times caught. Fast forward many, many years, turns out there was a serial killer that was living in our neighborhood who targeted teenage girls and was eventually apprehended in 2000. I walked all over that neighborhood at various points, even lived a couple blocks away from his last residence at one time. I don't necessarily think I would have been a victim of this person, but I can't help but think my doppelganger was keeping me out of some sort of trouble now that I fully understand the dangers lurking in plain sight.
Goo.
Hot.
Son of a bitch.
The same words, I'm tired.
So, my big brother, his girlfriend, and my nephew, who's 4 years old, were playing and talking outside. My mom was inside with my three-month-old niece. We're Puerto Rican, and I know we are known for being loud, so I'm used to hearing my mom yell for me or my siblings. While we were playing, I heard a voice that sounded just like my mother, all the way on the left side of the apartment near the woods, screaming my full first name.
Not your full government.
Not the government name. My nickname is Cheeky, so I'm going to use that instead. I heard, "Cheeky, ven aquí," which means Cheeky, come here, clear as day, but sounding a bit far, again near the woods. I was right next to my door, or right next to the door of my apartment, so I know if my mom called me, I'd hear her perfectly. No one said anything, but I made a joke and said, "Either I'm crazy, or there's a damn skinwalker somewhere. I thought I heard mom." My brother starts laughing, and he told me he heard it and repeated what I heard. And he said he thought it was in his head because it sounded like it came from the woods and not our house. I went inside and asked my mom if she called me, and she shook her head and was still holding my niece.
Oh, goo.
No, thank you. I don't like it.
Hate it.
Yeah, especially when it's coming from the woods. You know how I feel about those. It's bad. It's bad.
Real bad.
When I was about 16 or 17, I was really heavy into doing the Ouija board. Other stuff happened, but the doppelgangers were definitely the worst. The first one was my mom. I heard her come in.
Goo.
And my best friend was with me. My friend and I walked down to greet her. She looked like a younger version of my mom and was carrying groceries. So I tried calling out to her, but she didn't respond and walked into my brother's room. Then I got a sick feeling. I called out to her again, but she still didn't respond, so I followed her up. She was not there.
Goo.
When I walked back down, my real mom had come in and didn't know what was going on. She was also wearing a different outfit. Mm. The next one was my brother. My mom was talking to him on the phone, and he said he was on his way home. As soon as he hung up, my brother walked in the door. He talked to us for a little. Mom wanted him to take out the garbage or something, and then he walked into the bathroom. He had been in the bathroom for like 15 minutes, and then I got the sick feeling again. I asked if he'd fallen in or something. Then, my real brother walked in and was freaked out.
Ew.
My mom checked on him all night to make sure he was okay. Both times they had darker eyes, and it sort of felt like a dream, but I was definitely awake and other people witnessed it.
Nope.
Big fat no.
No, thank you.
I remember one time I was talking to my dad in a hallway of my house. I don't really remember what it was about. But we both saw my mom clearly walk past us and into her room, shutting the door. I walked back out into the living room, and my mom was still on the couch, asleep.
Nope.
I looked back at my dad, and he looked at me. We were both terrified. We both crept over to their bedroom and looked at the closed door. Neither of us went inside. We were freaked. I'm pretty sure Dad slept on the floor that night.
Oof.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
I looked at him. He looked at me. I looked at him. It's a TikTok.
Oh.
I remember one Sunday morning, my brother and I were watching Cardcaptor Sakura on TV, and someone knocked on the door.
Don't answer it!
We lived in an apartment that was empty. The owner hadn't rented the second floor. It was a two-bedroom apartment with a kitchen and a bathroom by the door. So I'm saying, like, upstairs was empty.
Right.
A small apartment, but with a big window that faces out to the door. So when I heard someone knock, I checked the window, and I saw my father. So I thought. I was going to the door to open it. When I was going to unlock the door, my mother pulls me away and screams at me not to open the door because I don't know who it is. I told her I saw my dad. She freaked out, going to the window and checking, and then checking the peephole. She started to get terrified, and she said to go to the farthest room in the apartment and to not come out.
Oh.
She went and woke up my dad. My dad got up angry and confused. We told him what we saw, and the man was still knocking at the door.
Oh.
My dad screamed, "Who is it?" No answer. He said he'll call the cops. No response. While my dad was busy screaming at him, we saw that he was just standing still in front of the door. So my mom took us to the farthest room from the door while my dad got ready to open the door with a metal bat.
Yo!
Once he did, the man was gone. My dad goes out looking everywhere around the apartment. The apartment door was a heavy metal door and was always heard when someone comes in and out, but we heard nothing that morning and nothing when my dad opened the door. We heard no footsteps either, but my brother, mother, and I saw that man that looked exactly like my father.
No!
I truly hate it.
Oh, I hate it.
Oh, I don't like this one either. This next one. My son recently told me that he's been seeing a ghost in our house that looks like me.
Nope.
It kind of creeped me out, but I believe him because I've experienced unexplainable occurrences since I was a kid. When I was younger, my dad and grandma would occasionally see a ghost in my childhood home that they said looked like my younger sister. I don't want any of that.
No, thank you.
Both times that my family experienced doppelgangers, the doppelgangers refused to respond when spoken to. The first was my sister's doppelganger, who my brother told to go downstairs for lunch. She did not answer. When my brother walked downstairs, he instantly saw my actual sister wearing a different shirt. She couldn't have passed by my brother so quickly because the staircase led directly to our dining area. The second was my own doppelganger, who stood at my door at 12 p.m., mute, and staring at my sister, who was using the computer. I wasn't actually home until 4 p.m. later that day after school. My sister didn't know that until she asked me why I was just staring at her without emotion earlier around noon.
Oh my god. No thank you.
New.
No thank you.
I hate it. What's this? Oh, okay. I'm like trying to remember which ones I put where.
Yeah, no, my brain. I get it.
Yeah. It was about 4 years ago. It wasn't the first paranormal occurrence to happen, just the one that scared me the most. One night, my 2.5-year-old son woke my husband and I up when he crawled into our bed. I couldn't fall back to sleep, so I decided to work on a project in my craft room. I was in there for about 45 minutes when the small monitor on the nanny cams started rapidly flickering on and off. Mind you, these were not motion-sensored cams, only continuous feed. So, Nothing should be turning it on or off. The cameras are in the living room and our son's room. I went over to the monitor and picked it up. It all of a sudden made this loud, ear-piercing sound like mic feedback. It startled me, and I dropped the monitor face down. I noticed the glow around the edges had stopped flickering. I picked up the monitor and turned to look at the screen. I saw my son standing as still as a statue in the middle of the living room, staring at the wall.
No!
Gets worse. I started for the door with the monitor still in my hand. When I glanced down again, my son's head turned, only his head, and his eyes went directly to the camera in the upper corner of the room.
Jesus Christ!
He had no expression on his face at all. I left the room and went through the small kitchen and dining room, rounded the corner to the living room,
grabbed a knife,
and it was empty. It was empty. The door to our bedroom was on the other side. I went in there, and my son was sound asleep in the same position he was in when I left.
Nah.
My husband looked up from his e-reader, and I asked him if he had woken up and went to the living room. He told me no. I asked if my husband had gotten up to go to the bathroom or the kitchen, thinking maybe he just didn't see our son try to follow him to another room. But husband swears he hasn't left the bed at all, and our son has been peacefully snoring away the whole time.
Kill it with fire.
Fire.
Like I said before, this wasn't the first time we had seen doppelgangers, but it was always so brief that you didn't really have time to get scared or have it completely register yet. This was different. It wasn't just a glimpse. Above all, it was the look on my son's face, that empty void stare when he turned his head to face the camera.
Mama, that was not your son. Kill it with fire.
Still, even now typing, it gives me the chills.
That was not your child?
No, it just had his face.
Kill it in fuego.
Don't love it. 20...
In fuego?
Let's see.
Yes.
21 years ago, I went to this hospital to have my son. My brother and his two sons, three-year-old twins, were living with me, and I was raising them, and they began copying my eldest son, who was four, and calling me Mommy. Shortly after I had my son at 4:31 a.m., I called my brother to tell him that it was a boy. No congrats, nothing. He was shaken to his core. He said about an hour after I left, he saw me standing at the sliding glass door. My nephew started saying, Mommy. Mm-mm. When he went to the door, or when he went to open the door for me, I disappeared. I always wondered what that might mean. My brother is a skeptic and looks for all logic, even assuming he may have hallucinated, but realized that his sons must have been hallucinating as well, and that's not logical. I remember the fear and unsettled speech when he told me. Of course, we never got any explanation, but I periodically think of this and what it may mean.
No, thank you.
I don't want to think about it.
No.
I don't think you should either.
I shan't.
A friend from work told me a similar story. Him and a cousin were at a party in the NorCal area, Berkeley or somewhere near the woods. He claimed he was in a party and told his cousin if he wanted to go to the gas station, which was nowhere near this place. His cousin accepted, and they both left the party to the parking lot. From there, the kid looks back at him and bolted through the woods. So he ran after him until about the edge of the parking lot, where he got an eerie feeling and decided not to chase after him into the woods. Smart. Upset, he went back to the party to find his cousin sitting and talking to some girl. He did argue with him about ditching him, but the cousin claimed he never even left the girl who was with him, and the girl who was with him claimed that they'd sat there talking for over an hour.
Yeah.
So the TLDR explanation, two dudes go to a party together, cousins. One cousin comes up to the other, is like, hey, you want to go do something else? Let's go over here to the fucking woods. And then...
No.
He just disappears. And then guess what? Surprise. The one wanting you to go to the woods was not your cousin.
No.
My cousins know better. They would never.
I would never.
That's how I'd know. Well, I'm just relating to the story. Oh, I know yeah. You would never. But even my own cousins know better. They'd be like, hey, you want to go to the woods? I'm like,
munch over my hammy.
Get the fuck out. I don't know you. You're not my family. My family would never ask me to go to the woods.
No, I think I just had a Tourette's moment. Don't stare at me like that.
Don't know what's happening, but I do know
that
I'd hate it.
I'm like getting this feeling that you just really want to be in Fleetwood Mac. That's what it sounds like.
I mean, yeah.
Yes, but how did you get that from her singing about moons over my head?
Just the tone and the... And
is that what it is?
Yeah, it sounded like you want, like you're just like, this is my rumors.
Well, now I just really want both of you to recreate that album cover.
Tempt us with a good time. Shit.
Apparently, D is international today because we've had. Had international French. We've had Midwestern.
And, we've had Swedish.
And then Swedish.
So mostly just European and American.
And then apparently I have a California accent because I don't pronounce my T's.
People have asked me if I'm from the Midwest before, but
I can see that with you. Well, yeah, I mean,
which makes no sense.
I don't know why. California accent doesn't seem to be an
accent. Have you ever taken the quiz?
Well, there's several. The one where I call the freeways by the number?
No, it's one where you say certain words.
Like what?
Santa Ana.
Santa Ana.
Yeah, no T.
Santa Cruz.
Santa. Like a double N instead of a T.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do that, but that's just because I'm lazy.
How do you say it? But one that bothers me is exactly.
Yeah, I don't like
it. I always pronounce the T in exactly. I hate it when people don't.
Exactly.
There's a fucking T there. Exactly.
There is. There's a T in fucking Santa Ana, too.
Well, there's an R in turmeric, an extra one. There's a T
Sacramento
R when nobody says.
Oh, turmeric?
Yeah. Which I'm like, I don't care what. That's like February. Nobody says that other R.
February.
Nobody February. Does that. Yeah.
February.
February. I know how it's spelled, and I said what I said.
Did you say Wednesday?
In my head, yeah.
To remember how to spell it.
Yeah. Anyway.
I still got some of these.
Yeah. Do you?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
This really happened, and it's one of the most unnerving things. So it was the 4th of July. My brother and I were setting off fireworks in the woods behind our house. America. We were passing back and forth an Aim and Flame cigarette lighter and lighting firecrackers and other small fireworks.
That's a great cookie.
What? Aim and Flame? That's a... Wait, what?
I heard Amos.
Oh, no. Oh, Aim and Flame.
Aim and Flame.
Lighter.
I'm like, lighters are good cookies? Whatever. I think we've lost it.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm so close.
You can go your own way.
I am so close. If you could just hold it the fuck together for like... 7 to 10 minutes.
Oh, that's too...
That's pushing right. it, I know, that's but...
6 to 8 minutes too long.
For the love of Christ, we're so close.
It's my fault I did this.
Yeah, no.
My long fucking story.
So, Aim and Flame, cigarette lighter, lighting firecrackers, other small fireworks. It was around 2 in the morning, 5th of July. I left to get something to drink and left my brother there lighting fireworks. I get back around 10 minutes later and he asked me for the lighter. I told him I didn't have it.
If I was their neighbor, I'd be pissed.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I left it with him, and he was actively lighting firecrackers as I left. He says, yeah, I know, but I just gave it to you a couple minutes ago. Where is it? I know my brother. This isn't something he'd lie about. We've talked about it many times over the years, and the story has never changed. The moon was bright that night, bright enough to see. He says he saw me in my same outfit, same face, same hair, everything. Apparently, the doppelganger said nothing, went up, and put his hand out.
Oh!
My brother assumed it was wanting the lighter. He gave the lighter, and whatever it was, walked away, never said a word. These were woods privately owned by my family, so no neighbors
right,
to get pissed.
Right, heard.
These woods were privately owned by my family, far out in rural Texas. Nobody else was out there. And if they were, that doesn't explain how they looked exactly like me. We continued setting off firecrackers till around 4 in the morning, having to use a short cigarette lighter because the thing stole our Aim and Flame.
Oh,
pretty,
damn.
Pretty creepy.
What is an Aim and Flame?
I think it's like one of the candle lighters.
It's a long clicker. I call it clicker lighters.
Yeah. Barbecue lighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All three. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Accurate. Correct.
Okay.
My wife said she saw me standing in the kitchen doing something while I was actually at work at the time.
My wife.
For fuck's sake.
He started it, and I couldn't.
Did
I
you hear
to,
me do it?
No.
Then it's her
I
fault.
Did.
I heard nothing.
I heard him do it, and I was just like, I gotta do it. And so I did it.
Wow. Sometimes your frustration Literally. Is worth every minute.
I'm glad it's fun for you.
It really is.
Really stoked on that. I love that for everybody that is not me.
Well, we love it for you.
Don't.
As compensation.
Don't. It would be great if you'd stop loving that for me.
Hey, can you tell me about some more doppelgangers?
I would fucking love to be honest.
Do go on.
Are we sure?
Yeah.
Are we ready?
Yeah.
I've got like 2 left.
Yes.
Are you?
Kind
of. Hmm.
I am.
My wife said she saw me standing in the kitchen doing something while I was actually at work at the time. She initially thought I come home from work and was worried, and then the figure of me apparently vanished, which was naturally even more upsetting. No other occurrences before or since then, and I've experienced nothing like this personally. No thanks.
No, thank
you good? You're fine?
My wife's in the kitchen with Dinah.
I'm just going to sit here like a teacher. I'm just going to wait.
You have one more?
Literally one more.
Okay, go for it.
You sure?
Yeah.
I'm good.
I'm great.
Okay.
We're in trouble.
No. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Oh, no.
Okay, Dad.
Oh, no.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm your dad now. Look at that.
Gross.
You called me Dad.
Call me Daddy.
So I went with it.
No. No. Absolutely not.
No. Agreed. We agree on that. No. Nope.
I have tears. Lord have mercy upon my soul.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're here.
I just drank water.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
One of my more perplexing stories is when my friend and I were about 15 in the graveyard of my hometown. I've tried to get paranormal evidence from graveyards, and honestly, most of the time, graveyards are the least active compared to other locations. True.
Yeah.
My three friends and I, my best friend, and my other friend, plus her boyfriend, had snuck out of our houses to walk around town and hang out, which was a common occurrence because our town is boring, but fun to explore at night. We all ended up sitting in a school field chatting, and my best friend and I came up with the idea to explore the graveyard, which was right across the road from our field. The couple said they were hanging back, and my best friend and I went in by ourselves. At first, nothing really happened. There's one dirt road going through the graveyard and a lot of evergreen trees. We were just walking around for about 15 minutes, and nothing was really happening, so we decided to walk down the dirt road back towards the field. We heard a sound like footsteps behind us and looked at each other before looking back. There was basically a shadow of a person behind us with no hair and no discernible features standing there. As we looked at it, I can only describe it as a spider-like.
What?
Oh,
gosh. A spider-like what?
Yeah, no.
Just describe it as spider-like. They added an A, and I don't think they meant
to. A spider-like being person?
I can only describe it as spider-like.
No.
So Mr. Waternoose.
Thank you. No, thank you.
A spider-like being run towards us.
No!
Like it looked like it got on its hands and knees, but backwards.
Yep.
And was fucking running towards us.
So like, the director's cut of The Exorcist down the stairs.
Nah.
My friend and I absolutely shit our pants, looked at each other, and ran for our fucking lives. Like we were sprinting faster than we'd ever sprinted before. On our way down the dirt road, we were almost out of the graveyard when we noticed, in our run, our other friend standing behind a tree. Neither of us said anything during the time, but we discussed it after and saw the exact same thing. The girlfriend of the couple standing behind a tree, hands to her side, just standing there. No, I want to also mention that she was wearing a bright blue sweater and jeans, and also her hair was dyed half pink and half blue at the time. So it was very clearly her and not someone else we were mistaking her for. We figured her and her boyfriend had come into the graveyard to scare us and watched us sprinting away, probably laughing. But when we got back to them in the field, panting, they were both sitting exactly how we'd left them.
No, thank you.
There was no way that she could have gotten back to that spot quicker than us or without us seeing her. We were both very shaken, and the couple didn't really believe us, but we both had the exact same story.
Yeah, and you smell like shit.
I would have shit my pants, too.
Hey, for why real. Does it smell like poop?
I'm pretty sure they were speaking metaphorically.
I'm sure they were, too, but still.
I would fully have accepted the fact if they shat themselves for real, because I may have.
Yeah.
When I see a fucking mysterious spider-like creature running backwards at me? No.
No. That's the hardest of passes.
The big time pass.
The hardest of hard passes.
So what inspired this very creepy little listicle? You remember...
A doggleganger?
No. Do you remember last week's episode where I mentioned getting a text from two unknown numbers? Because my phone went off and I was like, oh yeah, I got a text.
Yeah.
It's a group text with two numbers I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As it turned out, one of the numbers belonged to a former manager of mine from when I worked at a gym. She thanked me and the other person in the text thread for stopping in earlier and making her day. Friends, the first time I left my house that day was to come here and record.
Goo.
That. I didn't respond right away for several reasons, but mainly because I was like, what in the godforsaken shitting fuck is happening? Absolutely not.
Especially that person texting you.
Oh, not that one.
Oh.
But that same job.
Okay.
She was his...
She was cool.
Yeah, she was fine. Okay. She was great. Loved her. Okay. No, not that guy, though. He's fucking sucked.
He's the worst.
Yeah. Hope you get crabs. I don't know. That was the first thing that came to mind. He sucks. He can have crabs.
He shouldn't live.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, what in the godforsaken shitting fuck is happening? Eventually, I did message back something about how it must have been my evil twin. And thankfully, she responded to let me know she had actually meant to text her friend's son, whose nickname also just so happens to be Z.
Oh, so there is a logical explanation for that story. At least for that.
Because that text, paired with the incredibly ominous and mysterious "you have 5 days" graffiti that I'd seen like a couple days before that.
Yeah.
Almost had me deeply concerned that I was going to run into myself somewhere and have to endure some weird Jordan Peele style shit.
No thanks.
Because, as we've all heard,
there can be pissing rain outside?
It really is.
Okay.
It is. But as we've all heard, there can be only one, like the Highlander. But which one is the problem I have with doppelgangers?
No, thank you.
It's all a hard pass.
The hardest of passes.
Yeah. And the hardest fucking day to get through in this story, for me, the hardest story to get through. My sources are Ranker.com, Nathan Gibson, and then Reddit users Geobite, A Sad Crayon, EJ Llama, Brute OP, He Mew Liu, Project Rattler, Mommy's Had Enough, Flora Nova, B Squirrels, OK Panic 6083, Don Don Don. Magical Bunny, Hyper Ham, 51197, Celestial Spirit, Opinion Individual 704, Head in the Cloud 61, Dunwall 84, Grillo 7, Careless Aardvark 236, and then a couple of deleted accounts.
Everybody, this is Lana.
I know, she's just a baby. She's a precious girl. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Doppelgangers are very scary to me.
See, we start a band.
No, I don't want that.
I don't either. I want to start a band in 1975.
Oh Christ, here we go again.
Start a band at 68.
Yeah, okay, we could do that.
That's when shit was popping off.
Lana has things to say.
I prefer the early to mid 70s. She's got pants.
You know, we should be an established band in the 70s.
Heard, got it. That's what we're gonna do. We're gonna start out in 68.
Very important commentary, Lana.
It is.
She likes the idea.
I don't think that's what she was liking.
I think that we need to recreate the Rumors album cover.
You're welcome for that.
Yeah.
You're welcome for that.
That'd be fan-fucking-tastic.
I know.
And beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, we done it, y'all.
Truly.
You know the drill. Rate, review, subscribe, share.
Oh, that was aggressive.
If you'd like some exclusive motherfucking content, go become a patron.
Oh, my God.
Hi, Lana. So, till next time, y'all.
Hexes and hoes, y'all.
Hexes and hoes, y'all.
Oh, that hurt.
Bye.
Oh.
Bye. Hats off to the fuck you club.
The Vatican.
The Catholics.
The Vatican.
Specifically the Vatican.
Oh, sure.
The Vatican.
Doppelgangers.
And doppelgangers.
Hard pass, especially that spidery motherfucker.
Maybe that's what the Vatican is full of.
My wife!
Oh my God!
Aggressive!